Welcome, everybody, to Parshas Kisavo. What I'd like to talk about in Kisavo is the first paragraph, also the mitzvah, well known, called the Bikurim, the first fruits. Certainly it's a very popular topic to speak about it. It is a mitzvah for every landowner in the land of Israel on an annual basis to bring a basket with his first fruits and grains, particularly the seven that are praised in the Torah for fruits of Israel, two grains, wheat and barley, and five fruits, grapes, figs, olives, dates, and pomegranates. So whenever the first one comes up on the tree, the farmer is supposed to put a little string around it, and when it's ready, to harvest it and bring it in a basket. And as we're going to read, the procedure that he does with the assistance of the Kohen. First of all, the reason I'm choosing this particularly is because we're looking for conversations with Hashem. And the mitzvah of Bikurim gives an opportunity and actually an obligation for the farmer to actually converse with Hashem. It's kind of like a monologue because Hashem isn't answering him. But we're going to have words of the person to Hashem, and we're going to learn from the commentary of the Alshich HaKadosh, one of the four great commentaries of the last several hundred years that is called HaKadosh, the Holy One. There's only four of them. The Alshich was a student of Rav Yosef Karo, who authored the Code of Jewish Law. And he is well known for his rational and also Kabbalistic commentaries. But the mitzvah of Bikurim, when one looks into the sources, is a lot more than one would think. It's not just a mitzvah. Bikurim is like a fundamental mitzvah. It is a foundational mitzvah. It is a key mitzvah in the Torah. For example, the Mishnah, the oral law, describes that when the Bikurim were brought by the farmers, and usually they were done in the early spring, maybe around Shavuos time, but it could be done throughout the summer, there would be a great pomp and circumstance surrounding it. There would be music. There would be ornamentation. The baskets would be golden and silver for those who could afford it. Oxen would come before them with their horns adorned with greens and flowers. And the entire city of Jerusalem would just be buzzing over the ceremony of the Bikurim. There's something there. It's not just a mitzvah that a person does. Also, there is a hint in the beginning of the Torah, actually the very first word, Bereshis. The Torah begins with the word Bereshis, in the beginning. Well, Rashi cites the Midrash that says, you could also read it as, instead of in the beginning, as Bereshis, for Reshis, or for the sake of Reshis. Reshis means the first, and the Bikurim are referred to as the first because they are the bringing of the first fruits. So the Midrash is saying, Bereshis bara Elokim, as Hashemayim v'yasa'aretz. For the sake of the Bikurim, for the sake of the first fruit offering, did Hashem create heaven and earth. That's something. What's the meaning of that? So Rav Alshich says that it truly is a foundational mitzvah. Our sources, Ramchal, Kli Kabbalah, whatever, say that Hashem created the world for one purpose only, to bestow goodness on His creatures. And the way He did that, as we have seen so many times before, is by creating a certain air of independence within a man, which we call free choice, Bechira Chafshis, which requires a certain amount of hiddenness from God, a certain concealment, so that man kind of thinks he owns the place, if you will. He walks around, he's created with a certain unawareness that there's a God. God made that deliberate. We are pampered from the time that we are infants, and we truly grow up thinking that we own the place. And the purpose of creation in that way is so that man will come to recognize on his own that there is a creator that created him and that gave him his life. And that one day the man will say thank you, an acknowledgement, recognition of God. It's almost as if God gave us all of this for free with the expectation that the payback will be when we thank him. Because why else did he give us this for free? Only so that we can truly earn our place ultimately in the eternal world, and that we will earn that primarily by coming to recognize he who created him and he who gave him all that he has. You could almost say that the purpose of our lives and the creation of our beings is to be able to say thank you. And thus, Bikurim takes on a grand and a magnanimous mitzvah. But having said that, we know it's not so simple. We know that life is not just a simple matter of, hi, I know you're here, God, thank you. It would be too easy. There must lie in the challenge of life a great struggle within man. Saying thank you to God is not such an easy thing for us. Indeed, saying thank you to each other is sometimes not an easy thing. So the Alshich finds within this section an actual play-by-play development of the human psyche of the individual who brings his fruits, how he goes through the stages of this challenge, that he contends that the average person will actually be somewhat bitter and somewhat annoyed at the fact that he has to bring these bikurim. So I'd like to walk with you through these 10 verses or so at the beginning of Kisavo, and how the Alshich, with great insight and great penetration, will show us this process. It basically revolves on two different ways of looking at the land of Israel, which is really the object of our thanks. We find in the first several verses, in fact, in the first verse itself, two words, which are opposites. V'hayaki savo el ha'aretz, it will be, when you enter the land, asher Hashem lokecha nosein locha nachala, that Hashem your God gives you as an inheritance, v'yirishtav yashavtaba, and you possess it and dwell in it. Did anybody catch the contradiction, the paradox? Nosein locha nachala, gives you as an inheritance. Legalistically speaking, there is a difference between a gift and an inheritance. A gift has a donor and a recipient. It is not obligatory. The donor was not compelled to give it, and hence it is a gift. The donor is still living, in most cases. He chooses that someone should be the recipient of his gift, and by virtue of his gift, the recipient is now beholden and owes a debt of gratitude to the giver. And not only that, but the giver could, if he wanted to, have some strings. He could say that, you know, I'll give you the gift as long as you are alive. After that, I want it to revert. It's interesting. This Rosh Yeshiva that I mentioned before we started our class, I realized this is not on the recording, but Rav Shmuel Kamenetsky Shlita, one of our great rabbinic leaders of our time, who co-heads this yeshiva. So my son, when he left the yeshiva after 4 years and went to Israel, wanted to give him a gift. So because of the connection that he had with our great-grandfather, my great-grandfather authored some svarim. They're not in print, but we have in the family some copies. And my son wanted to give one of the svarim to Rav Kamenetsky as a gift. But he got the sefer from my brother. And my brother asked him if he could please ask Rav Kamenetsky that after 120 years, if we could get it back. So, okay. Enough. Didn't think that was unreasonable. My son wanted the Rosh Yeshiva to have it. So he gave it to him, and he wrote an inscription of thank you for everything that you've done for me and the yeshiva. And then Rav Kamenetsky came to visit Atlanta when Rabbi Pransky was installed, and he saw me, and he says, I have your sefer for you. So I said, that was a gift. He says, yeah, but I'm afraid of being a shomer. I don't want to be a guardian, because then I'm responsible. A shomer is somebody who's watching something temporarily, then he has to give it back. He says, if, in fact, we have to return it eventually, that means I'm not a recipient, I'm a shomer. And I don't want to take the responsibility. So he gave it back. Anyway, a giver, a donor, can take it back. And therefore, there is a relationship of gratitude required there. When there is an inheritance, the bequeather, I don't know how to say it, the one who gives the inheritance has passed away. And he'll never ask for it back. And you can't really say thank you either. An inheritance is absolute. It's final. And it's something really that comes to you by virtue of your birth. I don't know how it works with wills, but in the Torah, inheritance is mandatory. A father must give his property to his children, and there's a whole pecking order. So to say that Eretz Yisrael, Hashem gave to us using the language of gift, and to say that it's an inheritance, it's a contradiction in terms. And this comes about because, on one hand, Eretz Yisrael is an inheritance. Over and over and over again, throughout the Sefer Bereishis, Hashem is constantly saying to the forefathers, I have given you this land, and it is an inheritance for all of your children forever. And I will never take it away. A gift implies that it's something that Hashem has given by choice, more recently. So that's the question here. A farmer moves to Eretz Yisrael, he receives his tribal plot, his tribal inheritance. Every tribe received their land. And here he is, a landowner. Who does he say thank you to? Does he even have to say thank you? Is it a gift or is it inheritance? If it's an inheritance, it's mine. I didn't have to earn it. I got it by birth, by the mere fact of birth. Why do I have to say thank you at all? Is it a gift? If it's a gift, I have to say thank you, but it's not a gift. So that's the struggle. In fact, that is the struggle that we all have with saying thank you. Because the reason why it's so hard to say thank you is because of the attitude, it's mine, or it's coming to me, or I deserve it, or I earned it. That's the question here. That's the struggle. The struggle is, did somebody give it to me out of the goodness of their heart? Am I beholden to them, or is it mine? In modern Hebrew, they always say, magia li, it's coming to me, or in Yiddish, kumt mir. Coming to me. You know, that's one of the things that you hear from your parents or your grandparents. You know, children don't have gratitude. They think everything's coming to them. That is the issue. So, that's how the Alshech paints this picture. V'lakachto mereishis kol pri ha'adama. Second verse. You will take from the first of the fruit of your land, asher tavi me'artzecha, asher Hashem elokecha nosein lach, which you will bring from the land that Hashem is giving you. Here only using the word gift, the samta of Atena, place it in a basket, yalachta lamakom, and go to the place which Hashem has chosen l'shaken shemo sham, to dwell there. Uvaso el hakohen asher yihye bayomim hohen. Come to the kohen who will be there at the time. V'omarto elav, and say to him, here comes the conversation, higadati ayom l'Hashem elokecha. I declared today before Hashem, your God. Ooh, that hurts. Okay, Kohen, I'm doing this because your God told me that I have to do this. Kibosi el ha'aretz, I have come to the land, asher nishba Hashem lavosenu lases lanu. Hashem promised to our forefathers he's going to give it to us. It's a promise. In other words, I'm here, Kohen, because your God said that I have to come and say thank you for a land that belongs to me. So till now, the farmer is holding the basket on his shoulder, and he's had to schlep it. And the law says that you cannot have a proxy come. You can't send your servant. Here, drop this off at the Beis HaMikdash. You've got to bring it yourself. And now at this point, the Kohen takes it from your hand. And he places it down before the Mizbech of Hashem, your God. Here we have to follow the oral interpretation again. And what happens at this point is, the Kohen says to the man, take it off your shoulder. Let me hold it with you. We're going to hold it here for a while. And the implication is, you're not ready to give these bikurim. You're not ready to say thank you. I can tell from your tone of voice. You don't know why you have to say thank you. You think it's your land. So let's hold it here together. And now, go on with the conversation. And the Torah instructs, you shall declare and say before Hashem your God. And then we have the four verses of the history. It's familiar to us because it is in the Haggadah. The Haggadah of Pesach quotes these four verses because it is the Torah's quickest recounting of the story of Egypt. And you would think, if every single Jew has to bring Bikurim, has to say these four verses, there's going to be a pretty long line, isn't there? And yet the Torah insists, each Jew has to tell the same story. V'yomarta lifnei Hashem Elokecha, Arami Oved Avi, the Aramean Laban, he tried to destroy my father Jacob. What that means, says the Al-Sheikh, is he really messed us up, but good. What did Laban do? He tricked Yaakov. Yaakov wanted to marry Rachel. Lavan substituted Leah. Because of that, you know what that created? That was the source of the jealousy between all the brothers. Because Yosef ended up being born second to last. He was really intended to be Yaakov's firstborn son, because he was the firstborn of Rachel. But because of the order of birth, the other brothers were born first, and therefore they were jealous when Joseph was special. All that because love and deceived. Because of that jealousy, that's why Yosef was sold down to Mitzrayim. Says Lavan not done his trick, we may not have ever had to go to Mitzrayim. Now you'll tell me, but didn't Hashem tell Abraham way back when that his children are going to be strangers in a land not theirs and be serving there for 400 years? Wasn't that in the cards already? The Al-Sheikh says, yes, but it didn't necessarily have to be Egypt. It didn't necessarily have to be when it was. History could have been totally different. So because of what Laban did, Vayered Mitzrayim, Yaakov ended up going down following his sons because of the famine. He lived there, first small in numbers, and then grew to become great and mighty. And that turned into Vayareu Osanu HaMitzrim Vayanunu. The Egyptians mistreated us. They afflicted us. They placed upon us burdens from work. That caused us to cry out to Hashem. Hashem heard our voice. He saw our suffering, our toils, our oppression. And he took us out of Mitzrayim with a strong hand, an outstretched arm, amid great wonders and miracles. Says Abi al-Sheikh, that was also not scheduled or planned. Because once they're going down to Egypt, they really ought to be there for 400 years. But because the oppression was so harsh, we were crying. We couldn't take it anymore. So Hashem says, I'm going to have to intervene in my own plan. I'm going to have to perform miracles to take them out, because I'm really taking them out much earlier. He had to change the severity. It's like when you're behind schedule, you work faster or you work harder. So he made these slavery even harder so that he could bring them out before their time. And he brought us to this place and he gave us this land. What's transpiring? What's changing within the farmer as he says these words? He suddenly, if he's thinking about what he's saying, what he's realizing is that there's no such thing in life as it's coming to me. Well, you promised. Because look at this. Look at this situation. Hashem promised Abraham that something will happen sometime. But exactly how it would happen, when it would happen, and with whom it would happen was constantly in flux. It was not dictated that they were going to go to Egypt at all. That was because of Laban. Once they were in Egypt, it was not dictated when they will come out. And that means that you, Mr. Farmer, in the year 33, whatever the year was, there was no telling that you would be the one who would be in the land right now with bounty bringing a Bikurim basket. What do you mean it's coming to you? What do you mean this is the land that was promised? Who said you had to get the land? You see that everything that happened to you, in a global sense, it may be an inheritance. But to you, personally, in your own situation, it's totally a gift. That is the transformation that's going on through the reading of the verses of Bikurim. It's a transformational process. You go into the temple thinking, Skumtmir, I have it coming to me, and you leave thinking it's a gift, knowing that it's a gift from God. That is the transformation. And at that point, listen to how he concludes his words. Verse 10, V'atav, hine hevesi es reishis priyo adama. Now I have brought the first fruits of the land, asher nosata li Hashem, which Hashem gifted to me. How did he start? He got it to Hayom in verse 3, I declare before Hashem, your God, Kohen, that I've come to the land which Hashem promised. But now I'm leaving saying, this is the land that Hashem gave me. And then it says, V'nachto lifnei Hashem lokecha. Then he, the man, can take it away from the Kohen. He says, I can do it now. All right? You can let go. I'll take the basket. I'll put it right down in front of the altar. And I will say personally, thank you. I'm ready now to say thank you. The next pasuk is beautiful. V'samachta b'chol hatov. And you shall rejoice in all the good that Hashem has given to you. See, that's the key to happiness. The key to happiness comes when we realize that everything that we have is a gift. And that's not so easy. It's not so easy to shift. I mean, I'm thinking throughout life, my wife and I, every family, we have these discussions, these conversations of why did such and such have to happen? Why did they have to decide the way they did? Why did they have to take away this? Why did this have to change? Why did he do? Why did she do? In other words, so much of life we're complaining about the way we thought things should have happened and they didn't happen that way. Isn't that right?
Yes.
What does that stem from? It stems from an attitude of, well, I thought it was coming to me differently. I expected. I deserved. It always was. Why did he change it? Let's turn the tables. I don't deserve anything. I have nothing coming to me. I came into this world a naked baby that had nothing. I didn't deserve anything. Imagine if we could make this transformation from Yerusha, it's coming to me, to it's a gift. Imagine how much happier we would be. Imagine how we would appreciate what we have and how we would accept what we don't have. And imagine if we all would do this, we would actually be helping bring the world to its completion. Because if God created us solely for this purpose, if God created us for the purpose of Bikurim, Bishvil Bereshis, for the sake of the Bikurim, then if we would all do that, we'd be done. Then the Mashiach would come. So it's powerful. It's incredibly powerful. It sounds like we take it for granted because, sure, we always say thanks. We were raised to say thank you. But there's the word thank you, but then there's the true feeling. It requires a paradigm shift. We have to shift from Yerusha, inheritance, to Matana, to gift. And if we can do that, and by recalling, maybe we could read this, of course, you know, back to the Jewish roots, but if we could probably compose our very own recitation, our very own proclamation with facts of our own lives. And if we would contemplate that, then maybe we would be able to truly, with a heartfelt devotion, be able to say, thank you, everything's a gift. It would change our lives, and it would change the destiny of the whole world. That's the mitzvah of Bikurim that we have before us. It's very timely that Bikurim is read before Rosh Hashanah. Always a week or two before Rosh Hashanah, and imagine approaching Rosh Hashanah, the day of judgment and the day when we coronate God as the king. Imagine if we could come with having cleared that air and having transformed ourselves into this, how much of a more meaningful and potent Rosh Hashanah we could have. Shkoyach. Have a wonderful Shabbos.